I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Dirk Cal will just smash it away, and Babbel will chase, and Babbel is lightning, and Babbel could be away here. This could wrap it up. Liverpool are in the semis again. They are simply unstoppable in Europe.
That's good by Milner. Babbel! Ryan Babbel, what a big moment for Fulham. An enormous moment for Babbel, but one that he doesn't want to celebrate against his old club.
Taking on Giggs. He tries to hold him back. It's fallen for Couch! Babbel! Goal! Super sub, Ryan Babbel does it again!
Hello Ramblers, Andy here, and we've got a great guest for you today. Not just a great guest for a Ramble Meet, but someone who would be great for Luke's game. When we get into it, you'll know why. It's Ryan Babbel, everyone, who I was very excited to speak about. He's got an autobiography out at the moment, which is not a written autobiography, but a rap album of an autobiography called The Autobiography, obviously. It's fantastic. It takes you through his feelings about his career, current issues. It's really terrific, and I know about hip-hop, so I know. Give it a listen, but also I hope you enjoy the next 40 minutes or so. Ryan's very effusive and interesting on his varied career, which is really a number of careers smashed into one. Something for everyone in this one, I think. This is Ramble Meets Ryan Babbel. So, Ryan, congratulations on the autobiography. What gave you the idea in the first place, tell our listeners, to, rather than write an autobiography, do an audio one?
Okay, so
this is a time where I was in Ajax a few years ago on loan. And then we experienced the very first lockdown. At this time, of course, we didn't know how long the lockdown would take place. I remember being home, have no training, really nothing going on. And then I got approached by a Dutch journalist who asked me if I wanted to start the process by writing an autobiography. Since, he was familiar with me and know that, you know, my journey was quite interesting. And he was like, hey, you know, you should think of maybe, you know, start, you know, doing this process. It maybe will take a year because you will have really tried to go in depth and think and go back on, you know, how you lived all those years from the beginning. So I was like, nah, you know, I feel like it's too early. I'm not ready yet. You know, I was by nowhere near thinking of, you know, if I think about autobiography, I'm thinking about, oh, my career is ending, but I by nowhere near have that feeling yet. So I was like, nah, it's too early. However, I did got inspired by the whole concept. And I was like, hey, you know, I have nothing to do. And I was like, why don't I take the concept of the autobiography and try to translate it into music format. So I reached out to a few of my music friends. I broke down the concept and they were like, hey, you know, this is brilliant. You know, nobody did it ever before like that. And if you do it right, yeah, it can definitely be some special. So that's where the idea came from.
So just to let people know, if they weren't aware, music's not a new thing for you. You've been involved in music for a very long time and in hip hop for a very long time.
Right.
When you were a teenager, was it sort of football and hip hop fighting for space in your head and your life, or did they coexist quite happily?
Yeah, I think, I mean, they coexist. I mean, obviously people know me mostly for football, but before I became professional, I already had a life, right? I was a young kid growing up. And in my culture, music was always a thing. In school, I always used to play in school bands. You know, I always had a good ear for music. And so it was already part of me, you know, part of many kids' life. And then I was just one of those kids. And at the end, okay, I was fortunate to become a football player. But music, I kept music there, right? That's where I guess, you know, the music always stayed a part of my life.
So Ryan, there's always a footballer who takes charge of the music in the dressing room. Was that always you?
Not always, but I definitely try to have influences. of course, if you are in a dressing room with the likes of Steven Gerrard and Jamie Carragher, and you know, they don't really let the music box get controlled by a 20-year-old who's, you know, comes was new. But here and there I was able to slip my music taste in between the playlist.
So hip-hop and Dutch football has always been kind of a thing, because it's not just been you. Memphis is a keen artist as well. You had Royston Drenthe in the past who loved to rap. It's not really something we see, is it? Footballers crossing over into music that much. And, you know, you're very well traveled. You know lots of footballers from all over the world. Do you have a sense of, like, how unique that is, that relationship between Dutch football and hip-hop? And why do you think that is?
I mean, I guess for us, it's quite normal. But, if you definitely take a step back and look around it, I mean, I feel like if you look in the UK, UK has a great musical hip-hop culture as well. But I'm not sure if there's a football player who does music, if I'm wrong. Potentially, you know, you could have had footballers in the UK also being involved make some great stuff. But for us Dutch guys, like, we don't see it as us footballers crossing over. It's like I tried to explain, it's already a part of us and we feel like it's normal. Mm. We are already kind of accepted it by the culture and by the music, industry and friends. And then now it's just, you know, one of those things like, okay, you know, we keep doing what we've been doing before, but since we're now, you know, have more, you know, since we now are known for football, people it's new to people. Like, oh my God, like a football player doing music, it seems different. I guess, you know, that's how it is.
I mean, do you get any pushback from that? Because I think the sense is what you were saying about not a lot of UK footballers maybe going into music, for example. There is a sense that this is what you do. Stay in your lane. We see you as this. Do you experience any of that when you started to bring out music?
Actually, in the beginning, yeah. When I was younger, when I started putting out music, when I was 19, 20 years of age, I did a few things where I was, of course, involved in music video and in some, you know, some type of freestyle session. And yeah, even though it were only, you know, like a handful of things that I put out at that time, was nothing serious. It was also recorded in my summer holiday. It got received. It got perceived as in that I was constantly in busy in music and that I could by nowhere concentrate on football. So the media was portraying me like, oh, he's not concentrating on football. And then fans believed it and jumped on it. And then I got criticized. So, you know, the last thing I wanted was having the wrong perception about that. So I took a step back and stopped being involved with music in, on the forefront. After that, I asked myself, okay, well, you know, it's I'm still a human. Football players, besides football, they have a hobby. Some players like to do PlayStation all day. Some players like to go out. Some players like to go party. And I like to make music in my spare time, right? So I was like, how can I stay involved without it backfiring on me? That's where in 2009, when I was actually in Liverpool, I started a music company. And I was more focused on actually finding talent than me being on the forefront as a artist. And that's where also, now the business side came, you know, looking around the corner. I had to learn music contracts. I had to learn how the music business was working. And that was a interesting journey, you know, meeting the right people who could mentor me and explain how, you know, things, you know, were working. And I'm still involved today in the music business.
Do you think that sense that people thought you should maybe be concentrating on football at the beginning was because you're at a big club like Ajax, where every time you drop a point in the Eredivisie, it's a massive big deal?
No, for sure. I mean, now that I'm older, I totally understand, you know, where the criticism came from. However, I think, you know, football players should be just for his performance, right? I feel like, in general, I mean, it's not something that I think will be changed very quick, but, you know, I feel like football players are being lived by other people, by the media, you know? I remember back in the days, Twitter times, also during Liverpool time, if I would put a tweet out after a certain time, let's say after 11 p.m., I got a lot of reactions like, why aren't you sleeping? You should be training. So I was like, oh, shit, like, I cannot be on social media after a certain time anymore. Like, so, you know, you are really being lived by other people. And obviously, by the time I got more clever and intelligent and knew how I, you know, could use it to my advantage. But at the same time, you know, people need to realize, like, you know, we're also human. You know, sometimes we get 2 days off from football and then, you know, we just maybe want to stay an hour up later than usual. No, I definitely understand the criticism in the beginning, especially if you're in like 19, 20, you know, you just started out and you should be full hunger for football.
But at that age, it seemed like you already really had your head screwed on. I mean, you know, there's no denying what pressure there is at a club like that. But you've talked about how when you signed your first big contract, your parents made you put loads of it away in a savings account. And did you have an allowance or something like that?
Yeah. So, I mean, I was fortunate, of course, to earn my very first contract. At that time, it was for me already a big, big deal. I think the first contract, which was considered still a youth contract, but it was like 15K euros a month, which was a massive big deal for a 17-year-old. However, my parents opened a separate account for me and they allowed me 1,000 euros a month, right? Because I was still living at home. They were like, you have no expenses, so obviously you're not going to need all that money. So we're going to save that for you. You have an allowance from 1,000 euros and make sure that they taught me about using the 1,000 euros, and then from the 1,000 euros, I had to learn also saving. So they were like, put 500 euros away, and then live off 500 euros, right? So now, after a few months, I had a lot of 500 euros saved, and now with that, I could maybe buy something once, you know. And that's how they taught me discipline about money management very early on. So yeah, you know, that was a good lesson.
I mean, how hard do you think it is for young players, especially now, because we want to spot the next big young thing earlier and earlier? I think because football's more athletic generally, it is sort of built towards younger players.
Yeah.
So how hard do you think it is for them, and how much need do you think there is for advice in that sort of situation, maybe from the clubs?
Yeah, no, it's very, I think it's very, very necessary, and it's very hard. You know, even me, even though I came up from a good household, I still remember actually the first time that I was 100% in control over my account was when I made that move to Liverpool, because now it was a UK bank account, right? Not a Dutch one. And now obviously my parents kept reminding me like, hey Ryan, I hope you're not doing any stupid, you know. And of course, you know, I had my parents constantly in my head, but at the same time it was, I had more freedom now, and yes, I had my experiences with making mistakes. So yeah, I can imagine, you know, you have also a lot of players who didn't really had a good household, and now they're left with all the responsibility very early on. And then, yeah, you know, they're going to make mistakes. So definitely, I think it's very important, you know, they understand and learn financial literacy and understand what it means, what money actually is, and how powerful it can be and how you can use it to your advantage. But also, you know, they need to learn the other side of it, how it can fire back and harm you if you use it the wrong way.
I mean, you've said doing this autobiography, the concept felt weird at the beginning because you don't feel like you're at the end, you feel like there's more to go. But having said that, at 34, it's like you've lived several football lives. It's almost as if your right. career is a combination of three or four different careers. You packed so much in there. You must have had to look back at it a little bit while you were putting together this album. So how do you look back at it now and all the twists and turns it's had?
I definitely think a lot of ups and downs. At the end of the day, I also think, in the way, in terms of the potential that I had, that what people described, you know, I think definitely I could have done way much more, maybe with my potential. At the same time, I believe it was a lot of different factors why I maybe didn't really fulfill the potential. And it had to do, of course, with guidance, with mentorship. I felt there was a lack of support in certain areas where I felt like, okay, you know, if this coach or coaching staff would maybe put in a little bit more effort and trying to help me through this process, maybe I could have realized it earlier, you know. But at the end of the day, you know, I think I look back at a great career still, and I still have the ambition to play two or three more years. I feel fit enough still. Luckily, I didn't have very poor or bad injuries over the years. I actually recently heard that this is my 18th year as a professional.
Wow.
So, you know, a lot of ups and downs, but I'm very proud of the experiences that I've experienced.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices
down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously,
man. Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And on my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
We're Not Fucking Historians is the show all about Irish history, where Shane Todd and Hazel Hayes bring you a few facts and plenty of crack. This month saw their most important episode yet, the history of Ireland's favourite malty beverage.
That's where he's got the brewery, St. James's Gate. He took out a 9,000-year lease.
In the year 10,000, that's going to be a sad day for Guinness when they're booted out.
10,759 AD.
Heineken just come in and go, finally we've got it.
On Tuesday, they're reflecting on their own festive traditions and a few things you might not know about the Emerald Isle's Christmas connections.
There is apparently mounting evidence that St. Nicholas of Myra, who inspired the legend of Santa, is buried in County Kilkenny. It's actually on private land, so they don't allow visitors.
I don't think it's a great one to sell to kids. Can we go to Disneyland? No, come on, I'll take you to where Santa's buried.
So come on in and get involved. Search We're Not Historians. That's We're Not Historians wherever you get your podcasts.
We're Not Fucking Historians is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
You talked about maybe not quite reaching your potential. I mean, something that comes across in the lyrics of the autobiography is that it's clear you've been quite stung by some of the criticism you've received over the years, particularly at home.
Right.
How do you feel about that now? And did writing the record kind of help you process that a little bit, I guess?
Yeah, so actually, me expressing myself on a record like this, I feel like in general as a football player, it's you have to be very careful how you express your feelings, right? Because we're getting fined so quick for expressing us in the wrong way.
Sure.
We cannot really always say how we really feel. So we have to always be political correct. And sometimes, it gets frustrating, you know. And I felt like music was a unique platform where I felt like I could be honest in a very creative way. And I felt like the need to kind of lay down also, yeah, a lot of my frustrations down. And yeah, the misunderstanding and the recognition that I felt at times that I didn't really got, I had to, you know, express.
And on that tune, Open Letter in particular, it's almost like a roll call of all the coaches at the beginning that you were under in your career. So Ronald Koeman gets a mention in there, Lou Van Gaal, you've got Danny Blind, Rafa Benitez. Yeah. How did those guys contribute to your career, and what were your experiences like working with them?
On the song, of course, you know, I go in depth of feelings and moments and opinions that I received over the years from, you know, the different characters. But yeah, you know, I learned so much, even if it wasn't, you know, it's very clear that at the end, I feel like, you know, I'm not a fan of Rafa Benitez, but at the same time, I've learned to look and see the other side of the coin of how ugly football can be if you're left out in the dark, right? So now experiencing those few years under him, it came a few years later back at a different team, but now I was able to manage it better and put myself and twist the coin in my favor again, you know, rather than having an attitude or behave the wrong way that it could only make it worse. So yeah, you know, I've learned from all these coaches, whether it was a good time for me or a bad time. So I look back at you know, at the end, grateful that I was able to play under all these great managers.
Benitez really splits opinion, particularly here in the UK, where some fans have absolutely loved him and other clubs' fans have not loved him at all. What was it that didn't click between the two of you, do you think?
Well, funny enough, because, you know, I don't really want to make it a thing that it was only me, right? Because people may be going to look at me crazy, like you just have a thing with him. But it was actually a general opinion, even from the players who were always playing, that he was not really, I feel like, a people's person, right? He was not really a person who was actually managing players on a human level to also give that confidence that you felt like, you know, that was sometimes necessary, you know, whether it was Fernando Torres or even Steven Gerrard at the time, you know, like, you know, they will tell yourself, like, they also had an odd relationship in the way he was managing them, right? So it was not only me. However, tactically, I have nothing negative to say, because that time, tactically, it worked very well. You know, he was very clear, and how he also, with him analyzing opponents, it was always very clear on how we wanted to play, and us as team were able to execute it. And that's why he was so successful at times. But sometimes, you know, especially with younger players, and you see it now, nowadays, managers are more invested in younger players and talent. And then you see also, you can get the best out of them more, you know, you can take a 10, 20% more out of their potential. And that was something that I felt like I needed maybe also, because I couldn't discover it myself. And then sometimes you need that little push. And I felt like I didn't get that push from Benitez in this particular time.
So the second part of your career has been very, very different to the first, because when you go to Al Ain, maybe people aren't expecting you to come back to Europe, because when players go out to the Middle East or the Far East, people don't expect them to come back. What made you go in the first place, and what made you come back?
Yeah. So, well, actually, I mean, it's I don't have to dwell around it, but the main reason was financially. I was so at one point, if you go take it a step back earlier, I was dropped from national team, and after that, the few years before I went to the Emirates, I was trying to fight to come back in national team, and at times I felt like I deserved a chance, but I didn't got the chance. So then at one point I switched the button. I was like, you know what? Forget national team. I'm just going to follow my heart and think what I should do for myself and my family long term. And in this case, I got this opportunity to go there. It was, you know, close to Dubai. It was, of course, you know, it's, I guess, I don't know if you have been to Dubai, but of course, it's a beautiful place to live and be. So to be able to play there was for me a new experience. They compensated me at that time very well. So I was like, hey, why not? Let's just go, you know, and that was the main reason why I went.
So what made you come back to Europe then? What made you think that, you know, I've got unfinished business and I'm going to go and do this?
So I signed a 2-year contract, unlucky enough, after 3-4 months being at the club, my career was there already over.
right.
Yeah. So there were a few incidents that occurred. So at the end, they let me know, like, hey, Ryan, you know, we're sorry, but, you know, you have to call your agent because, you know, we have to find a situation that you, you know, leave the team. So again, I was there, you know, for 3-4 months and I signed a 2-year contract. So now I'm like, okay, so how are we going to do this, right? So eventually I stayed and played for 7 months. And then in the summer from that season after, my agent was, you know, able to get me out of the contract, and now it was like, okay, you know, I think I was 29 at that time, and yeah, that was a time of like anxiety, and I was very nervous because you know, teams didn't really were standing in line to sign me, even though I was a free transfer. I didn't play for 7 months, and then people felt like, yeah, like you mentioned, coming from there, like, you're not sure if he's still eligible. But at the end, I was lucky. The Spanish team, Deportivo La Coruña, reached out and asked about me. They were in need of an attacker. I was a free agent. And you know, they gave me a chance to join the team. And I was able to refine myself in a very short time. I think I scored 5 goals in 9 games. And then after staying at the club for only a few months, because the January window, I had an opportunity to go join Beşiktaş in Turkey, who was playing Champions League at the time. So now I joined Beşiktaş, playing Champions League, doing well. And all of a sudden, I'm all the way there again within a year time frame from not knowing how my future was going to be, if I was going to find a football team, to a year later playing Champions League football again. Like, that was crazy. And with Champions League football doing well, now the Dutch media is writing about me again, like, oh, he's doing well. You should get a chance in the national team. And now, age 30, I come back in Dutch national team.
And so if you look at especially that second part of your career, the recurring themes are 3 separate spells in Turkey, and you end up having 3 separate spells with Ajax as well. I mean, I guess Amsterdam is home, so that's part of it. But what continually draws you back to Ajax and to Turkey, do you think?
Well, I feel like the way I felt, I feel still appreciated here in this country, Turkey, was for me always a good reason to come back. Personally, I feel more appreciated here than actually back home, even though that sounds crazy. So that was the main reason for coming back to Turkey, or always trying to find opportunities back here in Turkey. The 2 reasons that I went back to Ajax were 2 total different reasons. The first time that I went back was obviously trying to get back in national team. This was 2012. Even after a good season, became champion at that time, I still didn't got, you know, a chance to play and show myself again. But the last time had actually to do with me playing in front of the public eye, because it was in preparation to the Euros at that time, who was still a year earlier in 2020.
Still in 2020,
Yes. So I was like, hey, if I am going to play in a good team, a good Ajax team, which similarly plays as the Dutch team, then I can be already in that system. And then at the end of that season, which at that time I was, you know, a starter 11 in the Dutch national team under Ronald Koeman, it would have been, you know, 1 + 1 = 2. And then I can roll into a good form into the Euros. Well, unfortunately, it didn't happen that way. We got Corona. the Euros got set, you know, a year later. And yeah, you know, obviously that had a big impact on my my journey for, yeah, you know, the national team particularly.
And it had a big impact on the Netherlands in general, didn't it? Because yes. Ronald Koeman went off to Barcelona. Do you kind of look back, do you and some of the other players look back on that and think of what could have been if the Euros had definitely. Actually happened when it was meant to?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I mean, we were at that moment, we were in the elevator up. You know, we had rebuilt a new wave, you know, how they described it in Holland. Yeah, Ronald Koeman brought life back into Dutch football. And yeah, we were doing well. You know, we were doing well. So everyone had confidence. This was, of course, before everyone had all these injuries, Virgil van Dijk and Memphis and et cetera. So yeah, you know, we were... We would unfortunately never find out what could have happened if the Euros was, you know, in 2020. Yeah, you know, that's football.
And obviously, your third spell at Ajax got curtailed for that reason, as you were saying. But you must have got a closer look. All of Europe has been amazed by Ajax under Erik ten Hag over the last couple of seasons.
Yeah.
Being an Ajax boy and knowing the club so well, what is he doing differently that's making them so powerful in Europe at the moment? Because they're doing it again this season.
Yeah. I must say that Ten Hag is in my opinion, a very unique coach in terms of the way he wants to play. I feel like he modernized a few positions, especially the fullbacks. He added a few extra roles to them that in certain positions of the game, they become a midfield player. And that added extra value to keeping the possession. Also, without the ball, the way they would press a team, the fullbacks would go all the way up so that the attackers, the front three, would have an extra man helping, pressing up front, playing in the back 1v1. Not many teams, especially in England, want to risk 1v1 in the back. They always want to make sure they keep everyone in the back. So, yeah, that's the difference, the main difference, that he is able to, you know, pick the right players and put them on the position, and is able to perform that on the highest level. And you see, you know, what's happening. They always retrieve the ball back on the final third and able to score goals there and stay away from their own goal. And yeah, he has done that well over the past few years.
And for you, it's, I guess it's kind of a strange season in Turkey because Trabzon are well away at the top, but Galatasaray and all the big three in Istanbul are struggling a little bit.
Yeah.
Of course, you know Beşiktaş so well as well. But despite the fact you're struggling domestically, you guys have had a really good season in Europe so far as well. And you're in a group with Lazio, Marseille, not easy, some big challenges. So how have you found that? Because it's almost like a Champions League group on paper, isn't it?
It's interesting. But the people who have experienced playing in Turkey would tell the same. It's actually, without being disrespectful, a little bit easier to play European games than Turkish games.
Right.
Turkish games are very difficult to play by the fact that the organization in a game is, if you look at a Turkish game, it's not really organized and really structured how it is in England or in Holland per se, right? So that leads into a very open game, even though on paper, when you see a giant club as Galatasaray playing maybe against a bottom team, if you look actually at that game, it can still be a very open game. This team can still have chances against us because they're so unorganized, and that makes us unorganized. So, you know, Turkish games, Turkish league is not easy. It's a very tough league, very physical. You know, the leagues in general, you know, this is now my seventh year having the experience playing in Turkey. The top three is always actually struggling normally in the beginning of a season. They're leaving a lot of points on the table, but then they kind of like find themselves back by December, January until the end of the season. And then the other teams who are doing well, they lose energy and fall back. So normally you would say, okay, you know, Trabzon looks comfortable, but it doesn't say anything. You know, Galatasaray right. has been champion a season where they was where they were more or less 19 points behind, and it was right. still and it was already February, and they were right. still became champion. So anything can happen in Turkey. Turkish football is a lot of sensation. But that makes the league so nice.
Finally, I know you're not mopping up your career just yet, Ryan, but if you're looking right. at the next stage, with the music coming back to the fore, right. could MLS be a possibility? You get the two things sort of moving together?
I'm definitely open-minded for MLS. I'm definitely open-minded. And actually, it was already a kind of like a dream of me for many years to play in a great city in MLS. Not only because I think, you know, the football there has developed over the years, but also that I have something special with America in general going on. You know, I know I have a lot of friends there. I go there a lot during my holidays. So yeah, you know, if there's an opportunity to go there in the future, I definitely will consider it.
Well, look, thanks so much for joining us, Ryan. Best of luck with the record. It's fantastic, like I said.
Thank you.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.